on the phone with us with our trails report, Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Sorry we weren't able to hook up last week. It was kind of weird phone things going on, but anyhow, things are pretty normal out there right now. You know, we have good trails. I got a little bit of rain on them the other day. The bugs are starting to go away. Temperature's even down a little bit. Very, very little to actually probably talk about. The only thing we probably would recommend at the moment would be we do have a number of different trail projects going on. Most of them are up high. And if you can avoid probably getting out on them for the time being, that would be great. And I know it's always curiosity to get you out there, and certainly walking some of the new stuff is pretty cool. But if we could just ask people to stay off the new stuff that's under construction, that's always helpful. Other than that, just be aware of the Arts Fest this weekend. It's going to definitely make shuttles and things like that probably a little bit more difficult than it has been in the past or on other weekends. So I think just be aware of the traffic issues, and you should have a great weekend, and there's plenty to do out there. So go have fun at it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your letter to the editor about rude bikers. And are these were just comments then from those participating in the Jupiter steeplechase?
Well, that was, their comments were probably different. I think rude is the politest way I could put it to describe it. People shouting at racers, just vile obscenities and just a lot of it. It would be a new height in being disappointed about how trail etiquette is being maintained out there. You know, there's no reason for anyone to be getting mad at anybody else out there unless they're just really doing something stupid. And running in a race and being on a bike, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. You're on a bike, you're going to have to go slow if you're going down the Spiro course at that point. You were forewarned. It's been noticed. There's aid stations out there. My goodness, you know, there's lots of other options. That's not the only place it's happening. It's happening almost everywhere. And I think if you look at some of the responses that were in the park record as well, people really appreciate it being brought to the front a little bit. But basically, I mean, I get comments all the time about people being really outright rude. And I mean, we can have an opinion, we can be corrective, we can help people, you know, kind of figure it out, but we don't have to be outright rude. And I think we're better than that.
Let's spend just a second then talking about trail etiquette. We've got the pedestrian to the bikes to the horses and stuff, so pedestrians always have the right of way, up or down.
Correct.
Right, up or down.
Up or down.
Right.
And it's not speed dependent.
Right. And I would say most pedestrians are really good about getting out of a biker's way, but still it's like the biker needs to plan to stop, whether they see that person coming down the hill or as they may meet
up
them.
The hill.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we are, you know, I mean, mountain biking, you know, and I'm an avid biker, so, you know, it's kind of certainly disappointing for me to have to kind of beat up on the biking group, but it is what it is, and we just need to be, you know, I mean, we have a lot of people here, people out to have fun, I get it, but basically, if you're forced to slow down on the trail for a moment to pass someone, you should be really more super psyched to see that person out there just like yourself. So I don't know that getting mad and being rude is really the right answer. So let's just see if we can't do better, and hopefully we can. I mean, it's a busy trail system. It's way busier than most people ever think it is. So with that being said, we just need to be extra nice, I think, is what we need to be out there.
Okay, Charlie, talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye-bye.
KPCW News Time now, 8:13. 8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now on the phone, I have Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
Since we last talked, anything come through the door that you think we should know about?
couple of things I want to touch on. One isn't new coming through the door. It's one that's no longer going to go through the door. It has to do with the promontory development. Recently, the Eastside Planning Commission and the Summit County Council have been reviewing a proposal to modify a couple key provisions to Promontory's development agreement, and they specifically relate to a proposed development on the upper part of the neighborhood, an area called the Pinnacles. And one key provision of those proposed changes was consideration to allow an increase in home sizes up there. Currently, there's a cap of those home sizes at 10,000 square feet. There was a proposal to increase those up to 22,000 square feet. Council had been taking a look at this proposal over the course of a number of meetings, most recently this past Wednesday evening. They didn't take action on it. They wanted to, I think, delve deeper into the employee housing component of Promontory. This change would have resulted in a little bit over 400,000 square feet more residential construction if you took that additional 12,000 square feet and you applied it to these proposed 36 home sites. The council was concerned of the potential impacts and the need for employee housing. Those large residential units generate a fair share of that. And they wanted to sit down and explore some possibilities. I just received word yesterday afternoon, and I'll need to confirm it, but I am being told that that development agreement amendment is going to be withdrawn. So it appears that Promontory will just proceed forward with their existing entitlements, of which they have density that would allow the creation of these new lots. It appears that they're going to be moving forward with the existing home size limitations. So in terms of new applications, I think that's important for everybody to know. That one apparently is no longer on the table. I'm also being told here just very recently that we are going to be receiving an application, possibly as soon as today, for a reconsideration and a change in the tech center project out at Kimball Junction. As everybody's probably aware, there's new ownership there. They are looking at making some changes. I'm not sure the extent of those changes. We haven't had that application, but we may be seeing that as soon as today, like I said. And hopefully next time we talk in early September, I can give you an update on what those changes are, because those will be important, because, you know, we just recently went through some amendments to the Snyderville Basin General Plan specific to the Kimball Junction area. I think a lot of key objectives had been established, and so now this will be our first significant project to come through a review post those amendment changes. So we're very interested in seeing what those are, and like anything of that nature, there'll be a lot of public process involved in that, so the community can be involved. But those are really the two big things.
Okay.
That,
so the new owner
updates on.
New owner is Dakota Pacific, and again, this tech park approvals had already approved 1 million square feet of development allowed. You know, and in terms of what is permitted under the existing use chart and the development agreement, I mean, how could things change? It could just kind of tech park go away?
Well, again, we'll have to see what is being proposed. It doesn't necessarily imply that the tech park would go away, that those uses would be, you know, taken off the table. I think what we're more than likely going to see are ideas that will involve both more residential, and, you know, that's a broad category. Would some of that be workforce housing? Would some of that be just market? We'll have to wait and see, but the answer is probably. It's likely that there may be a provision for other commercial or retail to go into that area in addition to tech uses. I doubt that the tech use would necessarily just be completely eliminated. You know, one of the things that was a hallmark of the recent planning changes in the general plan for the neighborhood was looking to find a way to deal with or better manage traffic circulation and transit. And so we're hopeful that what we're going to see here is going to begin to touch on that.
Okay. So much development happening off of the State Route 248 in Browns Canyon area there in Wasatch County. We have kind of heard this come up a couple of times now. At what point are we going to make an effort to plan regionally for the Wasatch Back? I mean, and I was, after talking with Mike Crittenton from the Cedar Crest Community Overlay Committee, I mean, what he talked about was dissolving the interior boundaries and looking at what makes sense for everyone, not just individual property owners. Is Summit County going to step up to this?
I think Mike's comment, I didn't actually hear the interview. I didn't hear Mike's full comment, but I think he's spot on right, at least in the North Summit Valley and the areas around Hoytsville and Cedar Crest. We're actually doing that and beginning to study hard outside the context of individual property lines and developments what some of the right potential solutions would be. In terms of the 248 corridor, I would underscore that strongly as well. You know, we got a number of jurisdictions. We've got Wasatch County, and as part of that, you got to factor into that mix the community of Heber, Charleston, and Daniels. You've got Park City. You've got Summit County. You now have Hideout. You know, Hideout is a reality. It's been a community now for 10 years. Has there been a strong enough, you know, conduit of communication between all of those parties? Arguably, probably not as developed as we should have those discussions. And it doesn't mean that we haven't been communicating with one another. We have been. The degree that we need to start sitting down and focusing on that 40-248 corridor, I think, is imperative. The leadership, both between Summit County Council and the Park City Council, I know they have reached out to our constituents. And I believe there's actually an initial meeting to begin some of those discussions scheduled for early August. I believe August 12th, there's going to be a breakfast meeting where representatives, I think, are going to begin to sit down at the table. I was at the Hideout Planning Commission meeting last evening, and several similar sentiments were expressed. I believe there's a willingness on the part of Hideout to want to be able to communicate. I think there's certainly a willingness on Summit County side and Park City side to do that as well. And although I have not recently talked to my colleague, Doug Smith, over in Wasatch County, as busy as they are over there, I know with this recent series of annexation discussions, they're going to be more than willing to be at the table as well.
Okay.
You know, it's a bad excuse to say everybody's busy. Everybody is really busy, but I think some of these recent discussions about future annexations and for the different jurisdictions, thinking about what that's going to look like in the next 20 years. And if there's a good side of that is the recognition that we do need to talk, and it looks like we are going to be beginning those really soon.
Yeah, and I guess probably the issue there is, I mean, that what Hideout's looking for is some commercial development because it has none, and as we know, that helps kind of pay for new growth just because of the taxes that come in. So that it sounds like there's going to have to be some kind of a negotiated settlement. You know, I mean, the area needs some kind of grocery store, so everybody doesn't have to get in their car, right, and drive into Park City.
Yeah, and I've just been an active listener at those meetings, and some of the reoccurring themes that I'm hearing is the need to fund services for that town, and residential property taxes aren't always the best source of funding those. You're always kind of chasing the horizon, you know, financially to be able to pay for things like, you know, road maintenance and snow plowing service and police and all those sorts of things. So that's a big dilemma for them as well. The other thing that I've heard expressed coming out of those meetings is school related, the distances and the time that the kids inside hideout have to take to get to the schools over in Wasatch County. That's a big concern.
Yeah.
From Summit County's perspective, you know, I can't speak for Hideout or Wasatch or Park City, but you know, from Summit County's perspective, we are acutely conscious of what development occurs along that 248 corridor because it has significant impacts on the highway, on 248 and 40. And we want to be careful and deliberate in the decisions we make so that we don't exacerbate the problem. You can't always build your way out of a problem, but we don't want to be reckless in the decisions we make in the realm of land use just to add to that problem. And if these jurisdictions, by getting together, can, you know, cooperate in sort of those future land development strategies, particularly in transportation and transit that could help solve that, you know, I think we're on board with that.
Okay. We're talking with Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. Let's talk a little bit about the Cedar Crest Village Overlay. Where are we with this? I mean, I know that the committee continues to meet. They're trying to put together a plan that then presented to the East Side Planning Commission?
So the way the process is working, when the application was submitted for this village overlay, that application involves about 1,200 acres, 28 properties. And the way the process works is a subcommittee is formed, and that subcommittee is formed by a couple constituent groups. It's representatives from that broader 28 property ownership contingent. So we have five property owners who are sitting down at the table representing the bigger 28 members in that group. There are three planning commissioners, Eastside planning commissioners, and there are staff. Throughout this process, we'll weave in other stakeholders as well. Who might they be? It's going to probably be Public Works. It's going to be engineering. It's going to be some of the water providers, probably North Summit Fire District. It'll be Jeff Jones from an economic development. These people will help us throughout the process. What happens is there will be a land plan developed for the community. You know, what uses, where, how much, how are they circulated, how are we going to provide them with infrastructure. And when that's done, a zoning strategy will be studied. Do we suggest rezonings using the zones we have in the code right now? If not, do we need to create specific zones to help implement some of those? Might be a mixed-use commercial, might be a multifamily, might be a smaller lot, you know, single-family residential. That happens after the land plan occurs. So we're three meetings into this process. You know, so far what we've accomplished, and I think is a lot in a short period of time, you know, we've all agreed upon sort of the roadmap, the steps we're going to have to take, the work list that we have to get through in order to get this done. We actually developed and implemented an initial survey tool that went out to the property owners and got initial feedback from them. We spent a solid long meeting looking at, I guess, what you would call a SWOT analysis, you know, looking at that community. Where were the strengths? Where were the, you know, areas that, you know, are deficient, you know, areas such as, you know, potentially, you know, sewer, you know, where, what are the assets? What were the opportunities? And I was really pleased to see the depth of the dialogue that came out of that exercise. The last meeting we had was a week ago Thursday, and that's where we began kind of rolling up our sleeves to look at what are the development constraints in the study area. you know, where are the areas should we avoid to the largest degree, you know, putting development? Where are the opportunities? Where are the best places to put the development? You know, obviously what came out of that was, you know, where are those assets? And, you know, I think I can speak for the group. There are a number of assets out there that everybody recognizes are going to be important. It's things like the Union Pacific Rail Trail, you know, the Weber River. There's a beautiful area to the east of the community that's in the study area called Cedar Hollow. These are assets, you know, staying out of those steeper slopes, staying out of those more sensitive riparian wetland river areas. I think we have general consensus on that. So at the end of the meeting last Thursday, we sent the property owner representatives off to do some homework and to meet with the broader property owner group and to begin to have them put thoughts down on paper within these development areas or these development bubbles or pods, what their thoughts were. We're going to be meeting again with them this upcoming Thursday and beginning to compile that input onto a map. I think I read where we say we're going to start designing the town. That might be a bit ambitious at this point, but really what we're doing is identifying where the constraints are, where the opportunities are, and begin to kind of be spatially arranging uses. We got a lot of work ahead of us. There's been a lot of energy, and there's been a lot of, I guess what I would say, proactive, creative thinking. Okay. To me, this has been somewhat remarkable thus far because, you know, it's always been kind of the past history where we react and we argue over zoning and we don't have the opportunity to kind of set those aside and actually think of what those possibilities will be and test them. And this has been refreshing. And I commend the representatives that are working with us. You know, at the end, what we come up with has to be viable. At the end, what we come up with, you know, will result in something being built. We just think this process stands a better chance of creating something better that has more value beyond just monetary value than were we to do it in a traditional way where one subdivision application after another, one rezone after another, incrementally just fills in the valley, and we end up with something less than what could have been achieved. So I'm really excited about it.
Okay, Pat, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for talking.
Well, the Park City Council met for a mid-year retreat this week, as well as their regularly scheduled meeting. They discussed housing, Park City's visioning project, and more. Joining us now with a recap, Park City Council member Tim Henney. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the Vision 2020 project. You wondered if the think tank participants, 35 Park City community members, who basically asked to be part of this, were perhaps maybe too aligned in their philosophies. Engagement Director Linda Jaeger, Mayor Andy Bierman saying they thought the group was one of the most diverse that they have had something like this. But certainly when you look at the names on the roster, and good for them for always wanting to be involved, but the names are the same as we've always seen.
What? I couldn't have said it better. I agree. You know, we have a select group within our community that tends to participate in an awful lot of things. And if you go through that list, you'll see the same names. And, you know, but my concerns were addressed. Yes, it's a diverse group, but at the same time, you know, that concern is there. But David of the Visioning Consultants addressed it and said, you know, this is a place to start from. We've created the beginning, and we're going to go out and we're going to test it in the community, and we're going to test it repeatedly in a very robust fashion. And that'll be happening from now throughout the end of the summer, into the fall, and into the early winter. And through that process, it will start with this group, who are the engaged, active people, and get tested community-wide in an extremely robust fashion. That's what I needed to hear.
Yeah. And in terms of the people leading up this project from the IQ. Yeah. Impressed with what they've done so far?
Yeah, I am, and I think everybody is. And the more you learn about it, I think the more impressed our entire community will be with it. And it's already showing some things that are quite different from the last visioning in 2009. And we're starting to see that people are willing to use terms like radical change as the hoped and desired for position, and contrasting that with where they are concerned we may be headed. And that's a wonderful thing to be starting with and looking at and trying to, see where you want to go and where you think we're going. And unpacking that is going to lead to some different, I think, not core values, but different hoped for outcomes.
Yeah. And like you say, I mean, when we start talking about what we used to hear, keep Park City,
right,
small town. So that's the radical change, that it's like, we don't want to keep Park City anymore?
No, I think there's a recognition that in order to keep Park City and the things that we cherish and want to perpetuate into the future, it's going to require some radical action. And that's the part that people have come to realize and are beginning to embrace. And I see that as a real positive because, we set that course 6 years ago with the council and the government, and we've been headed on that course. As Steve Joy said, we've been nudging in that direction. I think it's much more than a nudge, because I look back to where we were when I came on council, and I think there was a paradigm shift from consciously reactive to intentionally proactive. And I can't overstate how important that change is. Now, it takes a while to show up in policies, programs, and deliverables, but we're starting to deliver. If you look at energy goals and what we're delivering, if you look at housing goals and what we're delivering, you look at social equity and what we're delivering, look at transportation and the changes that have happened there. There are things happening in very large scale across the community.
Let's talk about the housing conversation that you had during the retreat, the council exploring what building rentals would look like. And we're talking specifically, I think, here for the Homestake development in the Arts and Culture District. The mayor commented that he felt that this could take some of the responsibility away from the city's employers. And that's the kind of the target demographic for these lower income accessible units. You saw things a little bit differently. How so?
Well, think in terms of a housing obligation and who's responsible for different aspects of that housing obligation. And I do not want to relieve the employers of the responsibility that they have to provide housing for their workforce. I tend to take it to the next level of, what is clearly and obviously their responsibility. It's seasonal workforce. When we have people showing up in this community and they don't have a place to live, and there's an email circulating right now from some people from Argentina, six people coming for the winter, and they're looking for housing, and that email was sent to a realtor. And that realtor, okay, maybe they're going to be able to help, maybe not. That's going to end up in the Christian Center's pile or Mountainlands Community Housing Trust with the Housing Roundup. These are the things that we've done. So the community is being asked to carry the burden of the J1, and I don't want to lay it all on the J1s. It's seasonal workforce. The community is being asked to pick up that burden. In the past, we were able to do it with the changes with Airbnb and the price of housing and investment properties and the change of our community. We can no longer do that. So whose responsibility is that? I think it's very clear. I don't want to diminish that. That's what Andy was speaking to. I completely agree with him. I think there's also, in our responsibility as community housing, there is the first rung, which is, I would say, those are people who have been here. They've gone through the seasonal, they've transitioned from seasonal. They've made a decision in their lives that this is where they want to live. And it may be for a year, it may be for 5 years, it may be for 15. You and I came here not knowing how long we were going to live here. I've been here 27. You've probably been here close to 40. So that happens. We become community members. That's, at some point, we are going to have to provide that first rung of rental housing ladder that people can go from seasonal, living on couches and living with six people, to actually having their own place that is affordable. And I think we as a community, bear that responsibility.
Your colleagues on the council expressed kind of a lack of interest, though, in the city acting as a landlord for rental units. You alluded, though, to the way that Mountain Lands Community Housing works as a model for the city to follow. What's the hesitation from the rest of the council members, and why, I guess, why do you think it could work?
Well, you know, when you get into housing authorities, that's a big step, and it's worthy of, you know, complete analysis and exploration. And we have to really understand what we're getting into and the ask that we're making of the community. I look at Mountain Lands as a model. You know, Mountain Lands contracts out for properties that they manage, and they are a quasi housing authority. They have 300 rental units, I think. That's probably inaccurate, that exact number, but they have a large portfolio of rental units within the community. You know, they own them and they contract out to manage them. So the headache of the management, which is the issue that, you know, I think most of the council members were concerned about, do we want to burden our staff with the management aspects, the upkeep, overtime that this would require? And I look at it and I say, you know, it can be done. We have somebody in town who's doing it. Maybe we contract with them to do more. Maybe we learn from them how it's done. I don't see it as an overwhelming burden. I also look at the assets, and over 25 years, you pay them off using the rental income to pay off these assets. And in 25 years, the city outright owns these with no debt, and that's a nice return on investment. Just as you and I buy our homes with mortgages over time, and eventually you end up with the asset, and it helps your net worth.
A day later than at yesterday's council meeting, you kind of wanted to follow this up a little bit about deregulating land management code restrictions to allow for more affordable housing to build. Anything in particular that you had in mind here?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is the crux of the issue. I mean, let's use Woodside 2 as the example. We hear continuously from the private sector, if you would just deregulate, we could build all your affordable housing in this community. It's not going to happen. Not with our land prices, not with our cost to build. That's just a bunch of noise from the private sector. So I want to call the bluff, and I want to see what it would take for the private sector to actually build affordable housing. What sort of height would they need? What sort of density would they need? You would take Woodside 2, which is in compliance with our code and zones, and instead of 3 or 4 stories, you'd have 8, 10, 12 stories. And instead of 58 units, you'd have 200 units, 250 units. Oh, and on top of that, we'd have to build the parking for it. So we'd not only throw in the land, but we'd have to build the parking for it. These are all the things that come into play. This community has made it extremely clear, at least to me, I think, that we don't want to exceed our current regulations, our land management code. We don't want to give additional density. We don't want to give additional height. And we had a council member who argued very strongly that Woodside 2, which complies with the existing density, was too dense. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say, oh, let's partner or let's give it to the private sector and deregulate, but we don't want any additional density and we don't want any additional height. That's exactly what they ask for.
Yeah. So are you just saying you're not doing away with it, but it's like show us your best.
Nibbling around this issue of, you know, could we create some mechanism for the private sector to deliver affordable housing that wouldn't cost our taxpayers? And it always comes down to, yeah, if you give us the parking, you give us the infrastructure, you give us the land, you give us additional height, you give us additional density, we could do it. And I'm like, yeah, sure, you could do it. Of course you could. But we're not going to give you those things because our community doesn't want to give on those things. So until I hear from the community that we don't want you to spend our taxpayer money to meet this obligation, we agree there's an obligation, we don't want you to spend our taxpayer money, we want you to give additional density, additional height, I'm going to stand firm. That's a stake in the ground for me. And we have not had that sort of conversation yet. And I look forward to having it because it's a really good one.
The council also received an update at the retreat on the Maida Resort project in Wasatch County. We haven't talked about this on a council level much at all. What did you learn?
I didn't learn. I guess what I learned was, Maida is a land use authority that is very similar, has the same use authority. Well, it actually has much greater land use authority than a municipality like Park City. It has the taxing authority of a municipality like Park City. So you combined a land use authority that's greater, that supersedes our authority, and you combine that with a tax authority, and you've got quite a animal over there. And not only that, but it's enormous. So I always have wondered, how did we go from a 12-room chalet in Snow Basin to 1,000 acres or 1,300, 1,500, I don't know, what,
five,
5,000 acres? Yeah. 5,000 acres. I mean, how did that happen? I get the idea that we went from a chalet to a hotel, but this hotel has bloomed out to land use authority, taxing authority. It's getting Hideout involved. It's getting Wasatch County involved. They're, you know, coming up against our boundaries. And so that's the question for me. And I don't think we got many answers on that, quite honestly. We just got to, this is, you know, here we are. Hey, hi.
And this all, I think the city's part in this is the Red Maple Bar. So we've got $2 million in the bank.
Yeah.
Basically, we're going to buy that open space from the Air Force once the transaction happens in Wasatch County with MIDA. So where do things stand there?
I, you know, it's in limbo due to some, you know, final due diligence. It'll get done eventually. It really is no leverage in this situation. It's just a technicality, and you know, it'll be nice when we finally pay for it and get the land and we can be done with that, you know. But it doesn't change anything as far as what MIDA's doing down there in Wasatch County.
Okay, real quick, the approval for the use of the space by Muse PC, the songwriter group, was pushed back until after the tenants, council members, and budget manager Nate Rock would have a conversation to address all of the current tenants, the paying tenants' concerns about the group using the space. Anything you wanted to just mention about that?
We just need to do better outreach and have a conversation with the tenants and let them know that we hear them. And, you know, we just need to connect the dots and dot our I's and cross our T's and make sure everything's done. I didn't hear anything from Pete Gilwald representing the tenants that, you know, this is dead on arrival or they wouldn't accept it. They just don't feel like they've been listened to and taken into account. So we need to do that.
Yeah. And I think one of the concerns was that another nonprofit had come to the city and asked for some space there and yet was denied, saying we're not taking any new tenants. And I think that's the concern here.
To me, that's kind of rumor. I mean, that might have been Summit Land Conservancy, who's now over with Mountain Trails in a city-owned property. So who knows? I mean, I didn't get enough detail on that to have any understanding of that.
Okay. Tim, anything else you want?
I have to say, Leslie, this incident that happened over in Cook Drive, you know, our police did exactly what we've asked them to do. This was an act of hate and cowardice that was perpetrated on residents of our city, and it pitted our police officers against residents, and there are victims here. There are three victims. The residents who live there, they were targeted. Their unit, their house, their home, not the neighborhood, not the community. We were all targeted. We're all victims. But they were specifically targeted. The police were specifically targeted by putting them in this position of conflict, an impossible position. Police acted exactly as they're supposed to, with integrity, with professionalism, with respect. And the final victim is Mr. Wyman, who observed this and then has been brought in to inflame the situation by looking through a lens of racism. That is exactly what the perpetrator wants to do. There are victims community-wide. We're all victims of this hateful, cowardice act, and it's despicable.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tim, thank you. It's Park City Council Member Tim Henney. KPCW News Time now, 8:49. It's the local news hour. Well, Midway City asking residents and those who use their bike and walking trails for input and to tell us a little bit more what the city is doing in conducting a survey. I have the mayor of Midway, Celeste Johnson. Good to see him.
Good to see you, Leslie.
So tell us why the city is administering the survey.
First of all, it became very clear that trails were a key priority for our residents. And for many, many years, as development occurred, developers were required to put in pieces of trail in front of their development. So what we've ended up with is rather a maze of unfinished trails that take you nowhere. And now, 10, 15 years later, we have to maintain those odd little pieces of trails. So we're incurring maintenance costs on trails that don't go anywhere in a community where citizens want trails. So on a volunteer level, we have an enormous amount of talent in Midway, and a citizen has come forward. She has successfully written grants for the city in about, I think we're up to about $275,000 that we will match, and those grants come from the Utah Outdoor Grant Money Pool. So we are taking that money, we're matching it, and we're focusing completely on just connecting trail segments. So this is an exciting project for us, and we really want to make sure we've identified two very obvious areas that needed to be connected. The survey was to help us identify, are we beyond that? What do the citizens want? What would they value? Are they wanting to be able to get from their home to the mountains? Are they wanting to be able to get from their home to the main street? So I think at the last count, we had over 450 respondents to our survey. Midway is a very involved community, and all you have to do is ask.
Okay. So when does that wrap up? And
I think they'll probably run that for a few more weeks. We do have a lot of our second homeowners that come up to Midway during the summer, and we're anxious to get their input. They come to Midway, they've invested in Midway, and we want to make sure that their voice is being heard as well.
Is the link online then?
Yes, it is. You can find it on the city's website. Signs all around town have that, what do they call that code, that you can just click on with your phone and it takes you right to it as well.
Okay. What's the latest with the Homestead Resort Project?
Sadly, the Homestead Resort Project has... right now, it's a null project. Singular landowner within the project that has been unwilling to sell. So the investors are unwilling to move forward without clear title, understandably. And so unless something can be resolved there, and I've got to add my editorial take on this, that's a tragedy for Midway. This project was a good one. In my short tenure as mayor, I saw probably five projects come across my desk potentially for the Homestead. They weren't well funded. They weren't well vetted. They weren't viable projects. This was the first thing, and my city planner has told me this is the first project he's seen in 10 years that truly could have worked and made a difference. And Midway needed that. We need that to keep our resort tax.
Well, yeah. So has the application been withdrawn then?
It has.
And I was going to ask then how this project or the redevelopment of this project would help with regaining that resort city sales tax status.
Right. As you and I have chatted before, the status of the resort tax is based on a percentage of nightly rentals versus permanent homes or permanent residents. And we've been out of compliance. We successfully lobbied for and got legislation that gave us a one-year extension, and we have a Band-Aid project we're working on right now that would carry us for about 2 years is all. We just crunched some more numbers just this week, and without that Homestead project, the additional rooms that would have brought in, we're going to be in a world of hurt. And the thing that I don't know that our citizens fully understand is that in order to recoup the money that the resort tax gives us, I would literally have to at least double the Midway portion of the property tax.
Significant.
Very significant.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then within the Homestead, then it's not one owner.
There's Homestead has been a quagmire of interesting ownership. And there was a small parcel within the Homestead that has some condominiums on it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So that it can't work without that parcel?
Correct. Correct. It's in a very critical location. And again, the investors want clear title to the whole acreage before moving forward.
All right. Let's see. What's the latest with the Midway Open Space Committee?
What a committee. Again, I can't scream loud enough from enough rooftops the level of volunteerism and expertise we have in our town. So that committee has probably put in more hours than any committee to date that because of getting this bond passed. So they worked tirelessly to help educate the community on the pros and cons of this bond. Once the bond passed, they have worked tirelessly to put together a procedure so that anyone who would like to sell the development rights off their land has to go through the same hoops. It's critical that there is transparency. It's critical that there are very clear procedures and steps to follow, no matter who you are. And we have received many responses from landowners who are interested in selling their development rights. If we could purchase all of the development rights from the land that we have had applied for, we would acquire about 500 acres. That's pretty exciting in our teeny tiny town.
Yeah, but is that well over the 5 million
that
you have?
Well over, yeah. Yep. So there will have to be a vetting process, and hopefully the success of this may spur another bond.
Okay. And finally, I wanted to ask you about input. You're seeking input on a dog park. Tell us about that.
Yes. Again, concerned citizens. We have a little dog park in the valet park on the north end of town. And we've had, this last year and a half, several people have come forward with frustrations and concerns. And you know, as all elected officials have to do, we have to deal with whatever fire's burning closest. And sometimes we have to put off a few things. And I have to apologize because the dog park was one of those things that kept kind of getting pushed back. But a couple citizens have come forward, and they are corralling other folks who are interested in the dog park, who use the dog park. And we simply, again, want to speak to the people who are actually using it. What else do you need here? Basically, we fenced off a section of a park that has pot rock is the indigenous mineral of Midway, right? And so it's very high pot rock level, so we can't grow grass, we can't grow trees. And this is a section of park that's just been sort of neglected. And this group has come together, same thing. We want citizen input. This is, you know, from the people who actually will use this facility. And so through a volunteer effort, we'll get that list. We have budgeted about just over $30,000 this year towards the dog park. So some things will be happening.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
You know, I just appreciate the opportunity that you give us to voice all of this and be another form of getting information out to our citizens.
All right. Well, we appreciate you making the drive over. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Midway City Mayor Celeste Johnson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.